Okay, so normally our plan of picking an Aaliyah, one Aaliyah every year to focus on, gives us the opportunity to really cover things that we wouldn't otherwise cover. So hopefully that's true here also, but Parshas Kisetze, there's just so much coming at you so quickly that certainly we wouldn't be able to cover everything in the Parsha, but even just to pick any one Aaliyah is going to still be a challenge. So today that's also the case, that we'll focus on Revi. But there's so much to talk about just in Revi, we're just going to have to pick some highlights and hope that we can cover as much as we can in the time that we have. So verse to start off, there's a very crucial, perhaps the most crucial principle, according to some of the Rishonim, the most crucial principle of Judaism is possibly derived from this next pasuk, which you would not have guessed. The pasuk is about your involvement with Edomim and Moavim and Mitzrim, and you may think, how often does that happen, especially nowadays, that we don't know who's an Edomi and who's a Moavi and who's a Mitzri? So you might think that this is a pasuk with very little halachic relevance today. And the truth is, you could argue that this has as much relevance as any other pasuk in the Torah as far as the philosophy of Judaism.
Is it like America and something like that?
No, because, well, I mean, in a different way to America, but I don't think it's what you mean. But the principle of Hakaras HaTov is connected to this pasuk in a halachic way. And some of the Rishonim say that Hakaras HaTov is the key attribute that you require to have in order to be a successful Jew. And to incorporate Hakaras HaTov as the foundation of our attitude is a crucial step. And the Gemara in Bava Kamma has a fascinating statement. The Gemara in Bava Kamma in Daf Tzadi Aleph tells us that there's a halacha that somebody who drinks from a well, so he shouldn't be disrespectful to the well. He shouldn't throw rocks into the well. And you might think, well, so why is that so important that I should be makir tov to a person who helps me because a person has feelings? But the well does not have feelings. It doesn't feel well. And it's not going to know if I disrespect it or not. And in fact, the Meiri goes further. And the Meiri says, you shouldn't even think badly about the well. So that's two steps removed from anyone feeling the impact of what you're doing or what you're not doing, because you're not dealing with a human being and nobody knows what you're thinking. So what you see here is that the value of Hakaras HaTov is not about manners. It's not about politeness. Manners are important, but the Bali Musar have a language that said Hakaras HaTov is Yosem and Hanimus. It's not about being civil and being polite. And it's not even about saying thank you. Saying thank you is important. That's the expression of Hakaras HaTov, and that is the expression of Derech Eretz, which is crucial. But there's a midah before that of Hakaras HaTov, which means, literally translated, Hakaras HaTov, in literal sense, means to recognize the good. And it is crucial that we are able to recognize when there is benefit, when something is better than it could have been, that we're able to appreciate that and recognize that and to incorporate that into our attitudes and our behaviors. If we don't do that, so then nothing is going to have any impact. And the whole Torah is not going to be able to sink in. It's not going to be able to have an effect, because if you're not makir tov, so it doesn't matter how tov something is, it can be the tovest thing in the world, literally, but if you don't have that hakara, if you don't have the ability to recognize it, so it's not going to get anywhere. So many of the Rishonim understood that the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em comes from this fundamental value. So it is, first and foremost, a mindset. It's about you're appreciating and recognizing that your life is better because of this. So that's what the Gemara says, that you shouldn't disrespect this well. And the more well-known idea, or better-known idea, sorry, the better known idea is the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't hit the river in order to bring about Makas Dam, because he had a Hakaras HaTov to the river. And again, same question, the river is not a human being. And certainly the Jews didn't believe that the river had any godliness to it, that it could tell what you're doing or not doing. So why is that valuable? Unless we understand that Hakaras HaTov is first about your internal recognition that you owe your benefits in this world to this vehicle. So if this well brought you water, so then you should have a mentality that appreciates that. And if you throw rocks into it, if you think badly about it, it's not going to hurt the well, but it'll hurt you. It means that you're not going to be faithful to your appreciation of how you have benefited. So the Gemara tells us this then, and the Gemara says, how do you know this? Where do you see this from? Where do you see it from? You see it from this pasuk, Ki ger ha'yisa b'aretzo, that you were hosted in Egypt. So you have to have hakara satov to the Mitzrayim, and therefore you shouldn't hate the Mitzrayim. Now the question is quite apparent. You might say, yeah, they hosted us, but they hosted us for their own purposes, and they tortured us. So they kept us as slaves. We wanted to go, and they forced us to stay there. And even before that, it was with their own goals in mind. So why do I have to be makir tov to that? So what we see from here is that the hakara satov is not tied into what you owe to another human being. That sometimes is a component. Sometimes there is a chov to somebody because they chose to benefit you in a way that requires reciprocity. But even before you get to that, there is the mentality of gratitude, which is not contingent on the other person having chosen to help you or the other person being a person. It could be a well or a Nile River. That's not going to appreciate what you're doing. The Chi of Hakar Satov is there anyway. So the Gemara says, how do you know that? You know that from this pasuk. So that is an extremely crucial idea. So as much as you don't deal with Edomim or Moavim in your daily life, but the value of Hakar Satov, that should be the theme of your everyday life. And that the Gemara directly connects to this pasuk. So as far as your comment, Americans, yes, not that Americans are Edomim or Mitzrim, but quite the opposite, that we are obligated to have a recognition and appreciation for the benefits of living in a country that has provided us with so much liberty, and as Moshe Feinstein put it, chesed, medina shel chesed, and to certainly recognize, here the point is glaring, right, to recognize the difference between a life lived in America in 2022 as far as what it provides, and the life lived in most other countries in the world at most other times in history, and to appreciate what that means. So yes, in that case, it's very, very much relevant to that and everything that comes with it. Okay, so we'll definitely have to skip around a little bit in the interest of time, but look at Pasuk Yud. Ki teitze machane levecha v'nishmarta mikol davara. So here there are many meanings. We won't be able to speak about all of it, but here, as you go out to Mohammed, so you should protect against everything bad. Now, we have a prohibition called Lashon Hara. You may have heard of it. And some people sometimes argue that Chafetz Chaim made up the whole concept of Lashon Hara. You don't really have that in earlier sources. Now, suffice to say that I don't think that's correct. But it happens to be technically true that you don't have the words Lashon Hara in the Torah. But that doesn't mean that the Isser is not from the Torah. The Isser is from a number of places in the Torah. Most often it's quoted from a pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim, Lo Seilech Rachel V'Amecha, but there's actually a couple of other candidates, and a number of the other candidates are in Parshas Kisetze. So there's a couple of references in Parshas Kisetze to Lashon Hara, and one is from this pasuk. This pasuk is actually the closest you get to finding the phrase Lashon Hara in the Torah itself. Because as v'nishmarta mikol davar ra, you should protect yourself against every bad thing. So davar, as we'll see again in the same aliyah, will come up again in a few minutes, but Chazal had the tradition of reading davar as dibur. So therefore, v'nishmarta mikol dibur ra, the pasuk says, do not get involved in dibur ra. So that's as close as you find in the Chumash to the formulation of lashon hara, dibur ra, that you should be very careful to avoid this. And the Gemara in Ksubis quotes this pasuk as the source for the Isser of Motzi Shemra. Motzi Shemra, whether there's any difference between Motzi Shemra and Lashon Hara, it's not really clear. The Rambam sounds like, and the Chafetz Chaim works off this premise, that Motzi Shemra is outright slander. You make up total fiction about somebody. And Lashon Hara is rooted in truth. I think that's a little bit of a overly specific definition. Sometimes people take that definition too specifically in the way they interpret it, and they think that Lashon Hara means something that's actually fully true. Don't think that's the intention at all. But one way or another, so there are some who draw this distinction between the terms. from the Gemara, it's not clear that that's actually the distinction. So Motzi Shemra and Lashon Hara are very closely related, if not the same. And the Gemara has this phrase here that how do you know that Motzi Shemra is Aser from this Pasuk, from Nishmartem, Mikol Davara. So it's interesting that it is specifically in this concept of Kiseisa Machadel Ivecha. The Ramban has a comment over here, if you had a chance to see what the Ramban writes, that he's understanding that there is a additional Isser that's connected to Lashon Hara during wartime, because, let's see, it was Churchill who said, if we do not hang, together, we'll all hang separately. So if you're going to war and there's going to be internal divisions, so that's going to be even more dangerous. So whatever Isser there is overall of Lashon Hara or Motzi Shemra is reinforced during wartime, because that becomes even more relevant and even more dangerous during wartime. Rav Meir Simcha and Meshach Chachma writes that there's different Yisurim here, that Loselech Rachel is talking about your normal internal Lashon Hara, while here we're talking about revealing secrets to the outside world. And therefore, in that context, especially when you're dealing with war, so that also takes on a greater severity, and that's perhaps part of the issue. There's another possible reference to Lashon Hara as we move on. Let's skip to Pasuk Yudalit. So there, also in the context of your corner war, and you have to take care of all of your needs in that context. So the Torah says here, if you look at Pasuk Yudalit, V'yaseid tiyavacha al azeinecha, V'hoya b'shivtacha chutz, V'chafartava v'shavta v'chisisa et seisacha. So that you should have a spade together with you, because in order to cover up all of the human waste that you don't have bathrooms out there in the field, so you want to be able to cover it up. So the spade is for that purpose. But Chazal have a drasha, there's a Gemara in Ksubis, if you had a chance to look at it. So this word, al azeinecha, so the Chazal read also as aznecha, like your ears, and the idea of a yaseid, Chazal see that as a covering for your ears. So the Gemara says, if you hear a davar maguna, if you hear something that you don't want to be hearing, so then you should plug up your ears. And the Gemara says that's why earlobes were created, so you'll have that extra flap to put that in your ear, so you shouldn't hear what you don't want to hear. So if this is a reference to Lashon Hara, it could be a reference to other things also, but if it's a reference to Lashon Hara, so that sounds like what we're saying here, that there is an Isser to listen to Lashon Hara. So that's itself a whole discussion. We know there's a prohibition of Kabbalah's Lashon Hara. That's another pasuk that Chazal interpret both as that Isser and maybe even the Isser of speaking Lashon Hara from that pasuk. That's a pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim. The Torah says, Lo Siv Sashem Ashav, and the Gemara in the end of Psachim sees that as a source for Kabbalah's Lashon Hara, and maybe for speaking Lashon Hara too. So we know that we're not supposed to receive Lashon Hara, but the question is, does that mean you can't hear, or that you can hear, but you shouldn't accept it as true, or you shouldn't act on it? So it's the machlokas, actually, what Kabbalah's Lashon Hara actually involves. It doesn't seem to equal Shmias Lashon Hara, that just hearing Lashon Hara is not the same as being Makabal Lashon Hara. However, there's a very short jump from hearing to being Makabal, so it certainly seems indicated that there's a bad idea to listen to Lashon Hara, even if you're not being Makabal.
How do you control being Makabal or not?
That's like a great question.
You can't control how you feel.
That's a huge issue. So one question is, what does being Makabal mean? So the Chafetz Chaim understood it to mean that you shouldn't accept it as true. And others said, how do you control that? They ask your question, they say, how could that be? The Torah l'mit l'malachi hasharis, the Torah is not given to angels who have the ability to turn things on and off, apparently. So if you hear something from somebody you trust that it sounds logical and plausible, so you're going to believe it. How do you decide not to believe it? So some say that it doesn't mean that, therefore, against the Chafetz Chaim, they say it means you shouldn't act on it. So you don't treat the person differently because of what you heard. Now, that's the big machlokes, I think, as far as the Chafetz Chaim. So, the truth is somewhere in the middle, which is, it's a unique kind of area, Kabbalah's Lashon Hara, because yes, on the one hand, it's true, there's an automatic, instinctive process to believe in something which we don't totally control. But it's also not true, as the Chafetz Chaim, I think, appreciated, to say that we have no control over it. We do have some ability to impact how we accept things and how we frame things. And Ben Yonah understands that pasuk we mentioned from Mishpatim, Losius Hashem Hashav, that the pasuk translates, according to Unkelus and Rashi, the pasuk translates as you should not accept a false report. So Ben Yonah adds to it, because if you know that it's a false report, so then why would you need to be told not to accept it? Don't believe things you know not to be true, what's the point? So he would read it as you shouldn't accept something as true if it's possibly not true. So the truth is we do have control to reserve judgment and to take other things into context and to decide how gullible we want to be. So the truth is somewhere in the middle. That it's not like making a decision not to be makabel something is not like making a decision whether to pick up this Coke can or not, that I can control more directly. So it's true that it's not the same thing, but it's also not true that there's no control over it whatsoever. So the question is, if we say that that's Kabbalah's Lashon Hara, so one way or other, whether it's about believing it or acting on it, but that's still not the same as hearing it. So hearing it maybe is permissible, except that hearing it is clearly a very short trip to believing it, so it seems ill-advised, and possibly an Isser D'Oraisa. So the Chafetz Chaim discusses a possible source that says it may be an Isser D'Oraisa even to listen. And from this pasuk is presumably a drasha, it's presumably an asmachta. Right? So the idea that this pasuk is talking about covering up your ears from hearing something, that's clearly not the pashup shot, so presumably it's an asmachta, but maybe this means that in the rabbanan, not to listen. So if you have the option not to listen, so then you should prevent yourself from listening. But it's also complex, because Lashon Hara itself, as we understand, is a complex area, and sometimes there are things we need to know. So we have to be able sometimes to listen in order to assess what we need to know. And Chaim Ozer was quoted as saying that if you have somebody who's in a position of leadership, if somebody's a Rav or a Shiva, and he says, I'm not going to listen to Lashon Hara, so he's going to be derelict in his duty because he has people he has to take care of, and he's not going to be aware of what's going on. So he has to hear what people are saying so then he can evaluate whether he needs to act on it or not, or what has to happen. So sometimes it means that we can avoid listening to Lashon Hara in the first place, and that's recommended and maybe halachically obligatory. And sometimes it's not an option, just physically it's not an option, because it just comes to our ears before we have a chance to be aware of it. It would definitely be a lot easier if people would come up to you, if people would be makbid when they speak Lashon Hara, to come up to you and say, hi, I'm about to speak Lashon Hara now. Do you choose to accept or reject? So that would make life a lot easier, but it happens like that less than 50% of the time. But more often, you've already heard something, and then it's already there. So it's interesting, the Chafetz Chaim has a discussion. People think the Chafetz Chaim is living on a different world, and he can't relate to what normal humans go through. So one passage that he has really shows that he's much more aware of what people deal with than you might think, because he talks about a scenario where, let's say, you're in a crowd, and there are people speaking Lashon Hara, so what should you do? So you might think, what do you mean? You know, leave and turn the table upside down and make a big fuss. But the Chafetz Chaim doesn't say that, because, again, he's more aware of what people have to deal with. And so he recognized it's not always possible for you to be mocha and to stop other people from speaking Lashon Hara. And he also recognizes that it's sometimes counterproductive, that very often if you tell people that they're speaking Lashon Hara, so their instinct is to be defensive and to double down. So they'll say, oh, you think I'm not supposed to be saying this? I got to tell you why I have to, and they'll say it more. So he recognizes that it's not always practical for you to stop people from speaking Lashon Hara. It's not always practical for you to leave. That's not always going to be a realistic possibility. And it's not always practical for you to stick your fingers in your ear. That's not going to look so normal either. So the Chafetz Chaim was very down to earth in his discussion of this. He realized that all these things are not necessarily options for everybody. So he discusses what to do in that scenario. In a scenario where people speak Lashon Hara, so what are your responsibilities? And he has a set of rules there that you shouldn't do anything that looks like you're agreeing or endorsing what's being said. And you shouldn't be makabel. You should decide not to accept it as true, and you shouldn't benefit from it. It should be nichale, as he uses that term that we're more familiar with in Hilchos Shabbos. So it all relates to this pasuk, what exactly it's getting at, that ideally you would stop yourself from hearing Lashon Hara and other such things. But it's a complicated world, and you have to just have to know how to navigate those challenges. Eric.
Are you allowed to listen to a non-Jew talking about Lashon Hara about another non-Jew?
So on the surface, they say presumably not. It's a much bigger discussion how exactly the laws of Lashon Hara apply. But there's a big case to be made that at least on a broad level, there is a relevance to Lashon Hara also. And that certainly on a Midos level, there's a issue of Lashon Hara. Now, often, the reason you'd be hearing such a thing is because it's maybe relevant to a politician or something like that. It's relevant to decisions that we make in a democratic society that may have some practical relevance. So it gets a little bit more complicated. So the details are very variable. But on the surface, to be careful about Lashon Hara with everybody, about everybody, when it's possible, is definitely...
That's what I'm saying. Like, even like work talk. I remember like one time, like 2 summers ago when I was interning at a place, and like, a bunch of people were like talking, you know, some stuff about like the boss, and like I was getting involved. Someone's like, oh, you don't know what I'm going to say? I'm like, yeah, I want to say whatever. But like, I didn't, so like, I'm just thinking about it now. Like, is it like an issur to like, you just be there listening to them talk about that?
Issur to listen? Possibly not. But again, needless wise, it's being risky.
Okay.
And when it's avoidable, it's certainly, and you'll ultimately be much more respected for being a person who doesn't gossip but doesn't talk about people behind their backs, and being understood as a person who can be trusted to be generous of spirit, whether or not there's a technical issue.
When you're an intern, I feel like everyone feels like you're the person that you can talk behind their backs, because like, the regular people think that you like it, the boss, and the boss thinks that they like them, they love you.
So when they see that you have a value system that says you don't talk about people behind their backs, then yes, you're generous in how you talk about people and how you judge people. So hopefully that'll have a big hashpa. Now that's actually a good segue into the next pasuk, because we do have to move quickly in the interest of time here, but the next pasuk is extremely relevant also. So the next pasuk, which has a lot of references to tznius, not overtly, but is understood. So the pasuk of V'haya machanecha kadosh, below yirevacha ervas davar. So all of that is understood as being a reference to the kedusha of your camps, all your camps, and the obligations of tznius that connect to that. But there's also a crucial drasha here, which is related, it's kind of segueing out from what Eric was talking about, that, and now this is maybe the third or fourth time in this aliyah alone that there was a possible reference, so now we'll finally mention it, but there's also many possible references to what we call nivul peh in this aliyah. And this one, especially, ervas davar, so I mentioned before that davar is often understood by Chazal as a reference to dibor. There are many examples of that. So here, the Medrash and the Ikar Abba understands this as a source for the Isra of Nivul Peh, that Ervas Davar should be read as Ervas Dibor, that there is a Gili Arayat, so to speak, that extends to the way somebody talks, the way somebody speaks. So the Gemara has many references to Nivul Peh, or in the beginning of Pesachim, as a statement about the crucial importance of Lashon Nekiyah. And the Gemara in Shabbos, which is, I guess we'll make a little bit of a getting reference, Hakol Yodim, Kaol Am Nichnas Al Chupa, El Hakol Menavel Is Pid, whoever engages Nivul Peh about it, there are terrible consequences. So there is an Isser of talking in a Menuvelik way, and it's very possibly related to this Pasuk. Rabbeinu Yonah understands this as part of the broader category of Lashon Hara, but here it sounds like we're talking about the general Nivul Peh. And there's an interesting discussion, the Kadosh Glover Rav, and his Tshuvas, Eretz Tzvi. When we have more time, we'll tell you more about the Kadosh Glover Rav. I'm sure his name will come up again. He's a fascinating figure. But he discusses in one of his Tshuvas, to go back to what Eric was talking about, the issue of whether this applies to non-Jews as well. And the Makoros seem to indicate that there is an Isser of Nivul Peh for non-Jews as well. And it could make sense if we see this as a detail of Gili Arayis, and we know that's one of the Sheva Misbnei Noach, so it extends to that as well. And that's a crucially important point. As you talk about the workplace and how you conduct yourself in the workplace, I try to emphasize, especially in the business classes and in every possible context, that the prohibition of Nivul Peh is one of the major arenas for Chil Hashem and Kiddush Hashem Bizman Hazeh. And it's an area where you have to be extremely careful, because especially, like we just said, this is a concept which theoretically applies to everyone. It's not just about your unusual rituals of kosher food and Shabbos observance, but this is something which is theoretically relevant to the whole world. And say two contradictory things here. Now, on the one hand, the permeates the extent to which Nivul Peh has permeated society is horrifying. It's all over the place. And yet, the other contradictory possible perspective, there's still a recognition that refined people don't speak that way. So there's still some level of awareness that there is a value of speaking in a clean way and avoiding such profanity. So those factors come together to mean that this is one of the major arenas for Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem. So if you go to the workplace and you're careful to leave early on Friday and to only insist on food in certain packages, but you also speak in a profane way, so then the impression that you'll make is that, okay, they have some weird practices, but they're just as unrefined and profane as the rest of us, so it doesn't really have any impact on their personal sanctity. And that is the definition of the Chilul Hashem. That is exactly what a Chilul Hashem is. So an area where you can really make a difference, and as far as Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem is concerned, when you're working out there in the broader world, is to be careful about these issues of how you speak and what your sense of refinement is. And people will come to recognize that, okay, the same person who needs special food and special accommodations on Friday is also very careful in how he conducts himself and is radiating holiness, and it's going to make a huge difference. So this issur is one that is unfortunately not given the seriousness that it needs, and is one that we should take very, very seriously, and something that we should very much be aware of. It's also interesting that this is a little bit of a obscure drasha, but Rav Kook had a letter, just skipping out of Pasuk in Ches, where Pasuk says, "Lo siyah kadesh mibnos Yisrael, lo yeh kadesh mibnei Yisrael." You shouldn't have kadesha, which is a reference here to prostitution. What exactly constitutes that is a machlokes rishonim. It goes back a little bit also to our discussion of the Rambam and the mitzvah of kiddushin, what that is to offset. The Rambam understands this all as being relevant to the requirement of marriage before any physical relationship. There was a little bit of a debate in the rishonim, but Rav Kook had a letter where he talked about the need for a very broad Jewish literature, that the literature should talk about all kinds of themes and everything that is relevant to the challenges of the contemporary society. But you have to also be very careful to avoid all of the profane character and everything that is unholy in how this literature comes across. And he wrote a letter emphasizing that, and he quoted this pasuk to make this point. So that's one of the major themes that we have in this Aliyah. The couple of pasukim already that seem to, beneath the surface, be making references to profanity and the like, could also have been a part of what the previous pasuk about covering up your ears was talking about. And this is a very major value that certainly, as far as how you present yourself to the world, is something that you have to be very, very careful about. And the next pasuk, which also seems to be a little bit outside our sphere of activity, but not so clear. The pasuk says, "Lo savias nizona mecher kelev beis Hashem," that when you contribute to the Beis HaMikdash, you should not bring the wages of the zona or the cost of the dog in, and that seems to be talking about the Beis HaMikdash. But the Ramah, if you had a chance to see it, I sent you that source to look at, the Ramah in Kuf Nun Gimel quotes that halacha in the context of a shul, in any Dvar Mitzvah. So in any Dvar Mitzvah, you can't use an Esnan Zona or a Mechir Kelev, but the point is presumably also symbolic. We're not necessarily dealing with an actual Esnan Zona, but with the wages of sin, or with something that is derived from an impure, improper source. And there's a major discussion in Poskim as far as what can be used for mitzvos and for mitzvah expenses. And this becomes a big part of the imagery of that. So much more to say in just a few more minutes. So one of the major, major themes that is important to talk about is this next pasuk. The next pasuk of Lo Sashich L'Achicha, that you should not charge interest to your brother, Neshech Kesef, Neshech Ochel, Neshech Kol Davar, Asher Yishach. And this, by the way, is yet another reference, Davar Dibor. So the idea, you're not allowed to take interest here. And Chazal understands that that means even taking interest through speech. That's at least the third reference in this one Aliyah to Davar being interpreted as Dibor. So it's a theme that you have in Chazal in general. So if I lend you money, I'm not allowed to ask you to pay me more. And Chazal understands there's an issue with Ribbis Dvarim also, that I can't say, okay, all you have to do is pay me back, but also be nice to me in front of everyone else. Say hello to me in front of my friends, so I'll be popular, or say good things about me. So that's called Ribbis Dvarim, and that's also prohibited. It's also derived from this pasuk, a third reference here to davar being dibur. But the next pasuk continues, l'nachri sashich, l'achicha lo sashich, l'mani v'racha, shem l'kecha, b'chal mishlach yadecha, al ha'aretz asheratava, shem l'rishta. So you have a prohibition of lending with interest specifically to a Jew, and this would not apply to a non-Jew. So this is interesting, because we have a lot of Isurim and Mitzvos which maybe are specifically for Jews, as the topic was brought up, but very often we assume that in practice they apply to everyone. But here, when it comes to Ribbis, it's an explicit exception. The Torah is very clear that that's specifically for Jews and not regarding non-Jews. Now, there was a machlokes on either extreme, that there was the Tosus has the opinion that maybe there should be a mitzvah specifically to charge interest to non-Jews, and the Rambam had an opinion that there should be davka nis like that. Also, has an opinion like that as well. And there are those who maintain that you have an iser drabanan to charge interest to non-Jews. You have it in both directions. But la halacha, we assume that it's kind of a neutral point, that when it comes to non-Jews, you're not prohibited to charge interest and you're not obligated to charge interest. But the obligation specifically extends to Jews. We're not allowed to charge Jews interest. So that's interesting, because if this is a moral issue, if there's a moral problem with charging interest, so then you would assume it really should apply to non-Jews also. You shouldn't charge interest to anyone if it's really a moral problem. And that also goes to the whole question of, is it really a moral issue? So we find that nowadays, to charge interest is a basic expectation of the business world. You always expect that there's going to be some interest to the loan, and it's not considered to be immoral. It's considered immoral if you do it at an extreme rate, that's called usury. But at a reasonable rate, it's not considered immoral at all. So the prohibition, the question about that?
No.
Okay, so the question of how to relate, is it
Michael? Yeah, sorry, that's confusing.
Okay, that's okay. But so the question of why should there be an iser of taking interest when it does not seem inherently to be immoral is a big question. And there are a number of possible views. So some understand that it's true that it's not inherently immoral to charge interest, but you wouldn't do that to your brother. If your brother was in need and he said, okay, I'm really suffering here, I can't pay my rent, I need help. So you'd help him, you wouldn't say, okay, let's calculate how much interest you owe me. So maybe the purpose of this mitzvah is to see all of Kal Yisrael's brothers, as the pasuk seems to suggest. And that's why it applies specifically to Jews. The Avnei Nezer in his Truvas, so he has a special section about Ribbis, and the section is called Kuntras Bris Achim, the section about the covenant of brothers, based on the language you find in Rishonim also. So maybe that's the idea, that it's specifically about making sure that this bond of brotherhood is reinforced. So if that's the idea, so it's kind of a mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro, but it's still not one that is a basic principle of morality. We normally assume that that's a connected category, that all the mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro is just basic morality, but we see it's not necessarily the case. And here, perhaps, this is an example of ben adam l'chaveiro that is more than basic reality. More basic morality. So it doesn't have to apply to everyone. It applies specifically to Jews because of that factor. Alternatively, you could say that it's not about ben adam l'chaveiro at all. You could say it's about ben adam l'makom, and a number of the sources sound like that, especially the fact that you can't be mochel on ribbis. Even if the other party is happy to pay the ribbis, you're not allowed to make an arrangement to ribbis. So it could be that it's an avera ben adam l'makom. Why would you say that? So you could say that because actually to compare it to Shemitah, now that we're finishing off the Shemitah year, so we have a framework of Shemitah to think about, and the Torah in Parshas Bahar has the prohibition of ribbis again there, and there it has it together with Shemitah, and we can understand there's a similar idea that when it comes to Shemitah, we know it's about Emunah and Bitachon, that we're told to trust that God will take care of us even if we follow this non-intuitive path of not working the land and canceling our loans. So when it comes to ribbis also, it could be there's a mitzvah of chesed. God says you should take care of people. And for you to say, okay, but I'm only going to do that if I'm covered. I'm only going to do that if you agree to pay me not a lot, just the same I would get if I left my money in the bank. So that's an avera ben adam l'makom. That's an insult to God. That basically you're saying, okay, I'm only going to help this guy out if I get covered this way. So it's a lack of faith in God's mitzvah of chesed. So maybe it's an avera ben adam l'makom. It's possible to understand it that way. A third way you could understand it is that being that lending money is indeed considered to be a basic mitzvah of chesed. So if that's the idea, so then we have parameters of how we prioritize chesed. That we have to decide who gets our tzedakah and chesed first. That's something we spoke about a lot last year when we were learning about the Basra. So it could be that maybe the isser of ribbis is about taking a bribe. That essentially, if I'm allowed to charge people who are borrowing money from me, so I'll give the loan to the person who's willing to pay me more. And that's going to be essentially a deviation from the rules of the priorities of tzedakah and chesed, and that's going to be the problem. So maybe that's the issue, which is an interesting thing to think about. That could explain certain halachas and halachas ribbis as well, and such as the halacha we just mentioned from the previous pasuk of ribbis dvarim, that if we talk about there being a prohibition of my taking ribbis even in the form of compliments, so that's not going to hurt the other person. The person who's borrowing money from me, it doesn't hurt him to give me compliments. It doesn't cost anything. If they say I can't take interest because maybe he'll become bankrupt if he has to keep paying out the interest, so that I understand. But here, to compliment me doesn't cost anything. Unless we say that the issue is like a bribe. So just like when it comes to bribery, the concept of shochad dvarim, that you can benefit somebody by speaking nicely about him or to him, and that could cause him to favor you unjustly. So too, when it comes to ribbis, the ribbis is like a bribe to the lender, and the reason he can't be mochel, the lender, the borrower can't be mochel, is because he's not the victim here. The victim is the other guy who doesn't get the loan. And maybe that's the problem, that you can't take payment for lending money to people because it means that somebody else maybe unjustly loses out on this opportunity. That's the third possible explanation. Fourth explanation you could say is that it just means what it sounds like. It is about not bankrupting a person who's in need and making him have to pay when he already is in bad shape. And the fact that it applies even on small amounts that are reasonable, and even if the person is mochel, so maybe that's just a safeguard, essentially, a low plug, that if we're going to let people be mochel, if they say that they're willing to pay the ribbis, so then everyone's going to have to be mochel in order to get the loan, and there's not going to be any benefit of the concept of interest-free loans. And if we say that small amounts are okay, so pretty soon that'll mean large amounts are also okay, so maybe it's the safeguard that really we're worried about people being forced to pay against their will large amounts. But for that to be a viable protection, it has to be across the board. We don't take any amount, and we don't let the person agree. So those are four different perspectives on what the Isser of Ribbis is about. And they all relate to the chesed. They all relate to the fact that there is a chesed to lend to people in need, and that that's what it's about. And based on that, we can maybe understand a little bit the fact that there's an institution called the Heter Iska nowadays, which enables people to pay extra for loans that they are receiving in a business context, that they are receiving in order to be able to invest. And we restructure the whole deal so that instead of it being a loan, it's considered an investment on the part of the one providing the funds. And there's a lot of discussion about whether that's appropriate or not, or whether that is somehow subverting the intent of the Torah. So I think what you see from all these four reasons that we just gave, the real kavanas haTorah, it would seem, of the issur ribbis is when the loan is for the purpose of chesed, when you're trying to help out somebody who can't pay the bills, who can't buy groceries. So then we're obligated to do so with no interest, to not take any ribbis. But when it's for a business purpose, and it's not somebody who's in need in the more basic sense, so then really the time of hemitzvah, to go back to our previous discussion, doesn't seem to apply. Now, that's not enough basis to just say, okay, so I'll charge interest. It's still an issur daraisa to charge interest. But to restructure it so that it's not interest, but it's rather an investment, and so a profit on an investment, so that would address the letter of the law. And then maybe the spirit of the law is addressed by the fact that it's not referring to chesed loans, it's referring to business investments, and that's a different arena. And Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he says that the logic only applies by business investments, otherwise it's a total scam. And the Chofetz Chaim writes that if somebody would lend money and charge interest even through a hatariska, it wouldn't be a chesed anymore, the whole chesed wouldn't apply. So presumably we have different categories here, and when something is about chesed, that's where you have the real issue of this as far as the Tamei HaMitzvos, but then as far as the details, you still have to address that, so that's what the hatariska does. And we could mention maybe a fifth explanation, which is really related to the fourth explanation, but some suggest also that the reason there's an exclusion for the ISKA kind of arrangement, the business investment kind of arrangement, is because the real danger of ribis, maybe it really is that you are going to keep imposing on somebody who's already in bad shape, and they're going to go bankrupt. Like the language of the pasuk here says, lo sashich, that you're biting into someone, and that's how the Sefer HaChinuch understands it. That's from the language of biting. You keep biting parts away from a person until there's nothing left. They'll be totally bankrupt. So in general, that's true. If somebody is in need of money, doesn't have money, and you charge him interest, so you basically say, okay, you don't have enough to begin with, and now I'm putting you further in the hole because you also have to not just give me back what you didn't have, but you also have to pay me more, and you didn't have to begin with. So you're just pushing the person further and further into insolvency. So you can understand in a very straightforward fashion why there would be a big problem with ribbis. But if the purpose is it's a business investment, so then maybe there's nothing wrong with saying, listen, I don't want to take money from you that you don't have, but if you're going to use the money to make money, so then I have a right to share the money that you're making with the money. So to make you pay, you can take my loan and pay for groceries, so you don't have anything more than you started with, and now you have to pay me interest, so then you're really taking it out of nothing, you're really just getting in worse and worse shape. But if you're going to take my money and use it as an investment, so now you'll end up having more, so then it's reasonable to say I should be able to share in that, and that doesn't go to the spirit of ribbis. But again, the details still have to be addressed, and that is the perhaps the goal here that ISKA is addressing. So we'll just try to squeeze in one more point, which you see, we talk about it, it's a little bit ironic, the point, but I don't want to miss this one, so just we'll close on this. When I was growing up, so my father, Zichron Lebracha, on Friday night, we were not the most musical of families, so he wasn't necessarily such a chazan, and Friday night he would sometimes quote from the Chofetz Chaim that he said that you shouldn't sing Shalom Aleichem at the beginning of the meal, because Shalom Aleichem is for the angels, and the angels don't get hungry. The people at the table are hungry, the angels aren't hungry, so go right to Kiddush and don't sing Shalom Aleichem. So I remember him saying that as I was growing up, and then later on I started to look around, and I actually did find that quote many, many places. That many places, the quote of Chofetz Chaim is saying this, and the most recent that I saw, the last of us, seen this now in a bunch of places, it's actually in the Chofetz Chaim al HaTorah, Parshas Re'eh. They relate that. But there's a little bit of a difference, different versions, different yersos, and how the story is related. That the most halachically significant place that quotes it, the Sefer Devar Avram, the Kavna Rav, also makes this reference to the Chofetz Chaim making a point about this. And he understands it as a halachic issue that comes from the Pasuk in this Aliyah, that he thought the way to say there is that the Chofetz Chaim meant this specifically if there were aniyim at the table, that if you were hosting poor people at the table, so then it becomes a bigger problem to let them wait for their food, and that is the message at the end of this aliyah, that we have a halacha here of tzedakah, and that if you make a commitment to tzedakah, ki sidor nezer l'Hashem Elokecha, lo sacher l'shamo, so you're not allowed to delay in paying him. So you have to figure out what exactly the parameters are of delaying, but it sounds like what the Chofetz Chaim was concerned about is that here the person's waiting for the meal, which is tzedakah, he doesn't have anywhere else to eat, so the meal is going to be an act of tzedakah for this person. And if you're going to keep him waiting because you're singing, so maybe that's an issur about the acher, that's how the Dvar Avraham quoted it. So based on this pasuk, so that's more halachic implications. So that's a big discussion, is that really an issur of Baal Ta'acher? Rav Asher Weiss has a discussion about this in his Sefer on Zmiros, which was collected from other Svarim, but he has a discussion there. And he actually quotes It's another vindication of what my father was relaying, that he heard from somebody who, I guess an older person who was at the table of the Chafetz Chaim, and he witnessed this, that he wouldn't say Shalom Aleichem until later in order to be able to start the meal promptly. And he discussed there, Rav Asher, whether this really is a violation of Baal Tacher. And he assumes the halacha, it's not Baal Tacher, because what the parameters are maybe have to be determined. But presumably, whatever is normal expectations is not going to be considered a violation of doing it. So when you invite somebody to your house Friday night, so they understand, okay, whatever your rituals are as far as starting the meal, that's it. It doesn't necessarily have to be that, even though he's coming because he has no other way of having dinner, so it is an active stock-up, but it doesn't mean that he has to be given the food the second he enters the door. Then he understands that this is the process of how it's going to be served to him. So Rav Asher thought that wasn't a violation of Baal Tacher. But in general, the concern that staka should be given promptly is a major consideration. And here the Pesukim are telling us both the importance of following through with a commitment to staka, the idea that we have that even b'machshava, even if one has intention to give staka, so that's considered to be a commitment to give it and to give it promptly. We have this prohibition of lo sacher. We have to be aware of the impact that we have by delaying. So here the Chafetz Chaim was aware that even the impact of singing a song may keep people waiting too long for their needed nourishment. And here, talking too long about this aliyah will have the impact of keeping everybody from davening mincha. So we have too much to say in Parshas Kisetze, Baruch Hashem, Ohev, Mitzvahs, Lo Yitzpa, Mitzvahs. There's too many mitzvahs in this parsha for us to cram in, even in my aliyah. One share, but hopefully we got a little bit of a perspective. And I wish you all a wonderful Shabbos filled with mitzvahs and filled with kedusha and filled with kiddush Hashem. And it should be only good things.